even greater submission, to become nothing, to have no value, but I couldn't. I think it is in my nature to submit, as it is not in yours. But I need someone to belong to. You have someone, said Damon. Slaves are prized in Patras, and Torvald is smitten with you. I like him, said Erasmus, shyly, blushing. I like his eyes. I think he's handsome. And then he blushed again at his own boldness. More handsome than the Prince of Akelos? Damon teased. Well, I never saw him, but I really don't think he could be more handsome than my master, said Erasmus. Torvald wouldn't tell you this himself, but he's a great man, said Damon, smiling. Even among princes. He spent most of his life in the north, fighting on the border with Vask. He's the man who finally brokered the peace between Vask and Patras. He's King Torgir's most loyal servant, as well as his brother. Another kingdom. In Akelos, none of us thought we'd ever leave the palace. I'm sorry that you'll have to be uprooted again, but it won't be like last time. You can look forward to the journey. Yes, that is, I will be a little frightened, but so obedient, said Erasmus, and blushed again. The first to return were the foot huntsmen and the dog handlers from the first station, who were bringing back a set of exhausted hounds, having released a second fresh set as the riders swept past. To them also fell the job of destroying any dogs that were wounded past recovery by the sharp-tusked boar. There was a strange atmosphere among them. Not only the heavy, tongue-lolling fatigue of the hounds, it was something in the faces of the men. Damon felt a twist of unease. Boar hunting was a dangerous sport. At the mouth of the tent, he called to one of them. "Has something happened?" The dogsman said, "Tread lightly. Your master's in a vicious mood." Well, that was order restored. Let me guess. Someone else brought down the boar? No, he did, said the dogsman, a sour note in his voice. He ruined his horse to do it. She never had a chance. Even before he rode her into the fight that shattered her rear ankle, she was blood from flank to shoulder from the spur. He pointed his chin at Damon's back. "You'd know something about that," he said. Damon stared at him, suddenly feeling faintly nauseated. "She was a brave goer," he said. "The other one? Prince Auguste? He was a great one with horses. He helped break her in as a filly." It was as close as any man of his station would come to criticizing a prince. One of the other men, eyeing them, approached a moment later. "Don't mind, Jean. He's in a foul mood. He was the one who had to stick a sword through the mare's throat and put her down. The prince tore strips off him for not doing it fast enough." When the riders returned, Laurent was riding a well-muscled gray gelding, which meant that somewhere in the hunting party a courtier was riding double. The regent came first into the tent, stripping off his riding gloves, his weapon taken by a servant. Outside there was a sudden baying. The boar had arrived, and was likely being stripped down, its belly skin cut open and all the internal organs taken out. The offal given to the dogs.
"Nephew," said the regent.
Laurent had come with soft, padding grace into the tent. There was an aseptic lack of expression in the cool blue eyes, and it was very clear that vicious mood was an understatement. The regent said,
"Your brother never had any difficulty running down a mark without slaughtering his horse. But we aren't going to talk about that."
"Aren't we?" said Laurent.
"Nicaise tells me you influenced Torvald to bargain for the slaves."
"Why do it in secret?" said the regent. His gaze tracked over Laurent slowly and consideringly.
"I suppose the real question is what motivated you to do it at all?"
"I thought it was terribly unfair of you," drawled Laurent, "to burn the skin of your slaves when you would not let me flay mine even a little." Damon felt all the breath leave his body.
The regent's expression changed. I see you can't be talked to. I won't indulge your current mood. Petulance is ugly in a child and worse in a man. If you break your toys, it is no one's fault but your own. The regent left through the folded tent flaps that were held open by red silk ropes. From outside there came voices, and the chink of saddlery, and all the milling hubbub of a hunting party. And nearer, too, was the sound of the tent canvases flapping in the wind. Laurent's blue eyes were on him.
"Something to say," said Laurent.
"I heard you killed your horse."
"It's just a horse," said Laurent. "I'll have my uncle buy me a new one."
These words seemed savagely to amuse him. There was a jagged private edge to his voice. Damon thought, "Tomorrow morning Torvald departs, and I am once again free to try and leave this sickening, treacherous, overripe place, however I can." The chance came 2 nights later, though not in any way that he had anticipated. Woken in the dead of night, torches flaring and the doors to his room flung open, he was expecting it to be Laurent. When it came to these nocturnal visits, these abrupt awakenings, it was always Laurent. But he saw only two men in livery, the prince's livery. He didn't recognize the men. "You've been sent for," one said, unlocking his chain from the floor and giving it a tug.
"Sent where?"
"The prince," said the one, "wants you in his bed."
"What?" said Damon, bringing up short so that the chain pulled taut. He felt a sharp push from behind.
"Get a move on. Don't want to keep him waiting."
But, digging his heels in after the push,
"Move it."
He took a step forward, still resisting. Another. It was going to be a slow journey.
The man behind him swore. "Half the guard is hot to fuck him. You think he'd be happier about the idea?"
"The prince doesn't want me to fuck him," said Damon.
"Will you move it?" the man behind him said,
and Damon felt the prick of a knife point behind him, and he let himself be taken out of the room.
Chapter 10
Damon had survived summonses from Laurent before. He had no reason for the tension across his shoulders, the anxiety in his stomach, curled and hot. His journey was made in total privacy, giving the false outward impression of a secret rendezvous. But whatever this looked like, whatever it felt like, whatever he'd been told, was wrong. If he thought about it too much, hysteria threatened. Laurent was not the type to smuggle men into his rooms for midnight assignations. That wasn't what this was. It didn't make sense, but Laurent was impossible to second-guess. Damon's eyes raked the passageway and found another inconsistency. Where were the guards who had held position all along these corridors the last time Damon had walked them? Did they stand down at night? Or had they been cleared out for a reason? Did he use those words, his bed? What else did he say? Damon asked, and received no answer. The knife at his back pricked him forward. There was nothing to do but continue along the corridor. With every step he took, the tension tightened, the uneasiness increased. The grilled windows along the passage threw squares of moonlight that passed over the faces of his escort. No sound but their footsteps. There was a thin line of light under the doors of Laurent's room. There was only one guard at the door, a dark-haired man wearing the prince's livery, and at his hip, a sword. He nodded at his two fellows and said briefly, "He's inside." They stopped long enough at the door to unlock the chain and free Damon completely. The chain dropped in a heavy coil and was simply left there on the floor. Maybe he knew then. The doors were pushed open. Laurent was on the reclining couch, his feet tucked up under him in a relaxed, boyish posture. A book of scroll-worked pages was open before him. There was a goblet on the small table beside him. At some point during the night, a servant must have spent the requisite half-hour unlacing his austere outer garments
for Laurent wore only pants and a white shirt. The material so fine it did not require embroidery to declaim its expense. The room was lamp-lit. Laurent's body was a series of graceful lines under the shirt's soft folds. Damon's eyes lifted to the white column of his throat, and above that the golden hair, parting around the shell cup of an unjeweled ear. The image was damascened, as beaten metal. He was reading. He looked up when the doors opened, and blinked, as though refocusing his blue eyes was difficult. Damon looked again at the goblet and recalled that he had seen Laurent once before with his senses blurred by alcohol. It might have prolonged the illusion of an assignation a few seconds longer, because Laurent, drunk, was surely capable of all kinds of mad demands and unpredictable behavior, except that it was perfectly clear from the first moment he looked up that Laurent was not expecting company, and that Laurent did not recognize the guards either. Laurent carefully closed the book and rose. "Couldn't sleep," said Laurent. As he spoke, he came to stand before the open archway of the loggia. Damon wasn't sure that a straight two-story drop into unlit gardens could be counted as an escape route, but certainly otherwise, with the three shallow steps leading up to where he stood, the small, finely carved table and decorative objects all providing a series of obstacles, it was, tactically, the best position in the room. Laurent knew what was happening. Damon, who had seen the long, empty corridor, dark and quiet and absent of men, knew also. The guard at the door had entered behind them. There were three men, all armed. "I don't think the prince is in an amorous mood," said Damon, neutrally. "I take a while to warm up," said Laurent. And then it was happening, as though on cue, the sound of a sword being unsheathed to his left. Later, he'd wonder what it was that caused him to react as he did. He had no love for Laurent. Given time to think, he would surely have said, in a hardened voice, that the internal politics of Vere weren't his business, and that whatever acts of violence Laurent had brought down upon himself were thoroughly deserved. Maybe it was bizarre empathy, because he'd lived through something like this, the betrayal of it, violence in a place he'd thought was safe. Maybe it was a way of reliving those moments, of repairing his failure because he had not reacted as quickly as he should have. Then, it must have been that. It must have been the echo of that night, all the chaos and the emotion of it, that he had locked up behind closed doors. The three men split their attention. Two of them moved towards Laurent, while the third remained with a knife, guarding Damon. He obviously expected no trouble. His grip on the knife was slack and casual. After days, weeks, spent waiting for an opportunity, it felt good to have one, and to take it, to feel the heavy, satisfying impact of flesh on flesh in the blow that numbed the man's arm and caused him to drop the knife. The man was wearing livery, and not armor, a blunder. His whole body curved around Damon's fist as it drove into his abdomen, and he made a guttural sound that was half a choke for air, half a response to pain. The second of the three men, swearing, turned back, presumably deciding that one man was enough to dispatch the prince, and that his attention was better spent subduing the unexpectedly troublesome barbarian. Unfortunately for him, he thought just having a sword would be enough. He came in fast, rather than approaching cautiously. His two-handed sword, with its large grip, could cleave into a man's side and go some way towards cutting him in half, but Damon was already inside his guard and in grappling distance. There was a crash on the far side of the room, but Damon was only distantly aware of it, all his attention on the task of immobilizing the second of his assailants, no thought to spare on the third man and Laurent. The swordsman in his grip gasped out, "He's the prince's bitch. Kill him," which was all the warning Damon needed to move. He swung his entire body weight against the swordsman, reversing their positions, and the knife stroke meant for him ran into the swordsman's unarmored sternum. The man with the knife had pulled himself up and recovered his weapon. He was agile, with a scar running down his cheek under the beard. A survivor. Not someone Damon wanted darting around him with a knife. Damon didn't let him pull his knife from its grisly sheath, but pushed forward so that the man stumbled backwards, his fingers opening. Then he simply took hold of the man at hip and shoulder and swung his body hard into the wall. It was enough to leave him dazed, his features slackened, unable to muster any initial resistance when Damon restrained him in a hold. This done, Damon looked over, half expecting to see Laurent struggling or overcome. He was surprised to see instead that Laurent was alive and intact, having dispatched his opponent, and was rising from a position bent over the third man's still form, relieving his dead fingers of a knife. He supposed that Laurent had possessed, at the very least, the wits to utilize his surroundings. Damon's eyes caught on the knife. His gaze swung down to the dead swordsman. There, too, a knife. A serrated blade edge finished with the characteristic fretted hilt design of Sicyon, one of the northern provinces of Akalos. The knife Laurent held was of the same design. It was bloody up to the hilt, he saw, as Laurent descended the shallow steps. It looked incongruous in his hand, since his fine white shirt had survived the struggle in immaculate condition, and the lamplight was just as flattering to him as it had been before. Damon recognized Laurent's cold, strapped-down expression. He didn't envy the man he held, the interrogation that was coming. "What do you want me to do with him?"
"Hold him still," said Laurent.
He came forward. Damon did as he was told. He felt the man make a renewed attempt to free himself. Damon simply tightened his grip, aborting the ripple of struggle. Laurent lifted the serrated knife, and calmly, as a butcher, sliced open the man's bearded throat. Damon heard the choked sound and felt the first spasms of the body within his grip. He let go, partly out of surprise, and the man's hands came up to his own throat in a hopeless, instinctive gesture. Too late. The thin red crescent drawn across his throat widened. He toppled. Damon didn't even think before he reacted as Laurent slanted a look at him, changing his grip on the knife. He moved instinctively to neutralize the threat. Body collided hard with body. Damon's grip closed on the fine bones of Laurent's wrist, but instead of having things immediately his own way, he was surprised to encounter a moment of muscled resistance. He applied greater pressure. He felt the resistance in Laurent's body pushed to its limit, though he was still far from his own. "Let go of my arm," said Laurent, in a controlled voice.
"Drop the knife," said Damon.
"If you do not let go of my arm," said Laurent, "it will not go easily for you."
Damon pushed just slightly harder, and felt the resistance shudder and give way. The knife clattered to the ground. As soon as it did, he let Laurent go. In the same motion, Damon stepped backwards out of range. Instead of following him, Laurent also took two steps backwards, widening the distance between himself and Damon. They stared at one another over the wreckage of the room. The knife lay between them. The man with the slit throat was dead or dying, his body gone still and his head turned sideways. The blood had soaked through the livery he wore, blotting out the starburst device of gold on blue. Laurent's struggles had not been as contained as Damon's. The table was knocked over, the shattered pieces of a fine ceramic were strewn across the floor, and the goblet rolled on the tile. A wall hanging had been partly torn down, and there was a great deal of blood. Laurent's first kill of the night had been even messier than his second. Laurent's breathing was shallow with exertion. So was Damon's. Into the tense, wary moment, Laurent said, steadily,
"You seem to vacillate between assistance and assault. Which is it?"
"I'm not surprised you've driven three men to try and kill you. I'm only surprised there weren't more," said Damon, bluntly.
"There were," said Laurent, "more."
Understanding his meaning, Damon flushed.
"I didn't volunteer. I was brought here. I don't know why."
"To cooperate," said Laurent. cooperate?" said Damon, with complete disgust. "You were unarmed." Damon remembered the lax way that man had held a knife on him. They had indeed expected him to cooperate, or at the very least, stand by and watch. He frowned at the closest of the still faces. He disliked the idea that anyone at all believed him capable of cutting down an unarmed man, 4-on-1, even if that man was Laurent. Laurent stared at him. "Like the man you just killed," said Damon, looking back at him. "In my part of the fight, the men were not helpfully killing each other," Laurent said. Damon opened his mouth. Before he could speak, there was a sound from the corridor. They both instinctively squared off towards the bronze doors. The sound became the clatter of light armor and weaponry, and soldiers in the regent's livery were pouring into the room. 2, 5, 7. The odds started to become daunting. But,
"Your Highness, are you hurt?"
"No," said Laurent. The soldier in charge gestured to his men to secure the room, then to check the 3 lifeless bodies.
"A servant found 2 of your men dead at the perimeter of your apartments. He ran immediately to the regent's guard. Your own men have yet to be informed."
"I gathered that," said Laurent. They were rougher with Damon, manhandling him into a restraining grip like the ones he remembered from the early days of his capture. He surrendered to it, because what else could he do? He felt his hands pulled behind his back. A meaty hand clasped the back of his neck.
"Take him," said the soldier.
Laurent spoke very calmly. "May I ask why you are arresting my servant?" The soldier in charge gave him an uncomprehending look.
"Your Highness, there was an attack."
"Not by him."
"The weapons are Acheron," said one of the men.
"Your Highness, if there's been an Acheron attack against you, you can bet this one's in on it." It was too neat by half. It was, Damon realized, exactly why the 3 assailants had brought him here. To be blamed. Of course, they would have expected to survive the encounter, but their intentions held all the same. And Laurent, who spent his every waking moment searching for ways to have Damon humiliated, hurt, or killed, had just been given the excuse he needed handed to him on a platter. He could see, he could feel, that Laurent knew it. He could feel, too, how badly Laurent wanted it. Wanted to see him taken, wanted to trump both Damon and his uncle. He bitterly regretted the impulse that had led him to save Laurent's life.
"You're misinformed," said Laurent.
He sounded like he was tasting something unpleasant.
"There has been no attack against me. These 3 men attacked the slave, claiming some sort of barbarian dispute."
Damon blinked.
"They attacked
the slave?" said the soldier, who was apparently having almost as much difficulty digesting this information as Damon.
"Release him, soldier," Laurent said. But the hands on him didn't let go.
The regent's men didn't take orders from Laurent. The soldier in charge actually shook his head slightly at the man holding Damon, negating Laurent's order.
"Forgive me, Your Highness, but until we can be sure of your safety, I would be negligent if I didn't..."
"You've been negligent," said Laurent.
This statement, calmly delivered, caused a silence, which the soldier in charge weathered, flinching only a little. It was probably why he was in charge. The grip on Damon slackened noticeably.
Laurent said, "You've arrived late and manhandled my property. By all means, compound your faults by arresting the goodwill gift of the King of Acheron, against my orders."
The hands on Damon lifted. Laurent didn't wait for an acknowledgement from the soldier in charge.
"I require a moment of privacy. You can use the time until dawn to clear my apartments and inform my own men of the attack. I'll send for one of them when I'm ready."
"Yes, Your Highness," said the soldier in charge. "As you wish. We'll leave you to your rooms."
As the soldiers made the first movements towards leaving, Laurent said,
"I assume I am to drag these 3 derelicts out myself?"
The soldier in charge flushed.
"We'll remove them, of course. Is there anything else you require from us?"
"Haste,"
said Laurent. The men complied. It was not long before the table was righted, the goblet returned to its place. The pieces of fine ceramic were swept into a neat pile, the bodies were removed, and the blood was mopped at, in most cases ineffectually. Damon had never before seen half a dozen soldiers reduced to compliant housekeeping by the sheer force of one man's personal arrogance. It was almost instructive. Halfway through the proceedings, Laurent stepped back to lean his shoulders against the wall. Finally, the men were gone. The room had been superficially righted, but had not been returned to its former tranquil beauty. It had the air of a sanctuary disturbed, but it was not only the atmosphere that was disrupted. There were tangible blots on the landscape, too. The men were soldiers, not house servants. They had missed more than one spot. Damon could feel the beat of his pulse, but he could not make sense of his own feelings, let alone of what had happened. The violence, the killing, and the bizarre lies that had followed had been too sudden. His eyes scrolled around the room, surveying the damage. His gaze snagged on Laurent, who was watching him in return rather warily. Asking to be left alone for the rest of the night really didn't make much sense. Nothing that had happened tonight made any sense. But there was one thing that, while the soldiers performed their work, Damon had come slowly to realize. Laurent's posture was perhaps slightly more exaggerated than his usual insouciant lean. Damon tipped his head to one side and gave Laurent a long, scrutinizing look, all the way down to his boots, then back up again. "You're wounded."
"No."
Damon didn't remove his gaze. Any man but Laurent would have flushed or looked away or given some sign that he was lying. Damon half expected it, even from Laurent. Laurent returned the look, and then some.
"If you mean excluding your attempt to break my arm..."
"I mean excluding my attempt to break your arm," said Damon. Laurent was not, as Damon had first thought, drunk. But if you looked closely, he was controlling his breathing, and there was a faint, slightly febrile look in his eyes. Damon took a step forward. He stopped when he ran into a blue-eyed look like a wall.
"I would prefer you to stand further away," said Laurent, each word finely chiseled, as though in marble.
Damon swung his gaze over to the goblet that had been knocked over during the fight, its contents spilt. The regent's men, unthinkingly, had righted it. When he looked back, he knew from Laurent's expression that he was right.
"Not wounded." "Poisoned," said Damon. "You can restrain your delight. I am not going to die from it," said Laurent.
"How do you know that?" But Laurent, delivering him a killing look, refused to elaborate. He told himself, feeling oddly detached, that it was no more than justice. Damon perfectly recalled the experience of being doused with a drug, then thrown into a fight. He wondered if the drug was Chali. Could it be drunk as well as inhaled? It explained why the three men had been so casually assured of their own success in tackling Laurent. It also lay the blame all the more firmly at his own feet, Damon realized. It was sordidly believable that he would revenge himself on Laurent with the same tactics that Laurent had thrown at him. This place sickened him. Anywhere else, you simply killed your enemy with a sword, or poisoned him if you had the honorless instincts of an assassin. Here it was layer upon layer of constructed double-dealing, dark, polished, and unpleasant. He would have assumed tonight the product of Laurent's own mind if Laurent were not so clearly the victim. What was really going on? Damon went over to the goblet and lifted it. A shallow slide of liquid remained in the cup. It was water, surprisingly, not wine. That was why the thin rim of pinked color on the inside of the cup was visible. It was the distinctive mark of a drug Damon knew well.
"It's an Acalon drug," said Damon.
"It's given to pleasure slaves during training. It makes them..."
"I am aware of the effect of the drug," Laurent said, in a voice like cut glass.
Damon looked at Laurent with new eyes. The drug in his own country was infamous. He had sampled it himself once as a curious 16-year-old. He had taken only a fraction of a normal dose, and it had provided him with an embarrassment of virility for several hours, exhausting 3 cheerfully tumbled partners. He had not bothered with it since. A stronger dose led from virility to abandonment. To leave residue in the goblet, the amount had been generous, even if Laurent had taken only a mouthful. Laurent was hardly abandoned. He was not speaking with his usual ease, and his breathing was shallow, but these were the only signs. Damon realized suddenly that what he was witnessing was an exercise in sheer iron-willed self-control. "It wears off," said Damon, adding because he was not above enjoying the truth as a form of minor sadism. "After a few hours..." He could see in the look Laurent leveled at him that Laurent would rather have cut off his own arm than have anyone know about his condition, and further, that he was the last person Laurent wished to know or be left alone with. Damon was not above enjoying that fact either. "Think I'm going to take advantage of the situation?" said Damon. Because the one thing that emerged clearly from whatever tangled Varetian plot had unfolded this evening was the fact that he was free of restraints, free of obligations, and unguarded for the first time since his arrival in this country.
"I am." "It was good of you to clear your apartments," said Damon. "I thought I'd never have the chance to get out of here."
He turned. Behind him, Laurent swore. Damon was halfway to the door before Laurent's voice turned him back.
"Wait," said Laurent, as though he forced the word out and hated saying it. "It's too dangerous. Leaving now would be seen as an admission of guilt. The Regent's Guard wouldn't hesitate to have you killed. I can't protect you as I am now."
"Protect me," said Damon, flat incredulity in his voice.
"I am aware that you saved my life."
Damon just stared at him. Laurent said,
"I dislike feeling indebted to you. Trust that if you don't trust me."
"Trust you?" said Damon. "You flayed the skin from my back. I have seen you do nothing but cheat and lie to every person you've encountered. You use anything and anyone to further your own ends. You are the last person I would ever trust." Laurent's head tipped backwards against the wall. His eyelids had dropped to half-mast, so that he regarded Damon through 2 golden-lashed slits. Damon was half expecting a denial or an argument, but Laurent's only reply was a breath of laughter, which strangely showed more than anything else how close to the edge he was.
"Go, then."
Damon looked again at the door. With the Regent's men on heightened alert, there was real danger, but escape would always mean risking everything. If he hesitated now and waited for another chance, if he managed to find a way out of the perpetual restraints, if he killed his guard or got past them some other way. Right now, Laurent's apartments were empty. He had a head start. He knew a way out of the palace. A chance like this one might not come again for weeks or months or at all. Laurent would be left alone and vulnerable in the aftermath of an attempt on his life. But the immediate danger was past, and Laurent had lived through it. Others had not. Damon had killed tonight, and witnessed killing. Damon set his jaw. Whatever debt was between them had been paid. He thought, "I don't owe him anything." The door opened beneath his hand, and the corridor was empty. He went. Chapter 11. He knew of only one sure way out, and that was through the courtyard from the first floor training arena. He forced himself to walk calmly and purposefully, like a servant who has been sent on an errand for his master. His mind was full of slit throats and close fighting and knives. He pushed all of that down and thought instead about his path through the palace. The passage was empty at first. Passing his own room was strange. It had surprised him from the moment he'd been moved there how close his room was to Laurent's, nestled inside Laurent's own apartments. The doors were slightly ajar, as they had been left by the three men, who now lay dead. It looked empty and wrong. Out of some instinct, perhaps an instinct to hide the tell-tale signs of his own escape, Damon stopped to close them. When he turned, there was someone watching him. Nicaise was standing in the middle of the passage, as though brought up short on his way to Laurent's bedchamber. Somewhere distant, the urge to laugh accompanied a spill of tight, ridiculous panic. If Nicaise reached it, if he sounded the alarm... Damon had prepared himself for fighting men, not small boys with frothy silken overrobes thrown on top of bedshirts. "What are you doing here?" said Damon, since one of them was going to say it. "I was sleeping. Someone came and woke us up. They told the regent there had been an attack," said Nicaise. "Us," thought Damon, sickly. Nicaise took a step forward. Damon's stomach lurched, and he stepped forward into the corridor, blocking Nicaise's path. He felt absurd. He said, "He ordered everyone out of his apartments. I wouldn't try to see him." "Why not?" Nicaise said. He looked past Damon towards Laurent's chamber. "What happened? Is he all right?" Damon thought of the most dissuasive argument he could make. "He's in a foul mood," he said, briefly. If nothing else, it was accurate. "Oh," said Nicaise, and then, "I don't care, I just wanted to." But then he lapsed into a weird silence, just staring at Damon without trying to get past him. What was he doing here? Every moment Damon spent with Nicaise was a moment in which Laurent could emerge from his chambers, or the guard could return. He felt the seconds of his life ticking past. Nicaise lifted his chin and announced, "I don't care. I'm going back to bed." Except that he was just standing there, all brown curls and blue eyes, light from the occasional torches falling on every perfect plane of his face. "Well, go on," said Damon. More silence. There was obviously something on Nicaise's mind, and he wouldn't leave until he said it. Eventually, "Don't tell him I came." "I won't," said Damon, with complete truthfulness. Once out of the palace, he didn't intend to see Laurent ever again. More silence. Nicaise's smooth brow corrugated. Finally, he turned and disappeared back down the passage. Then,
"You," came the command. "Stop."
He stopped. Laurent had ordered that his apartments be left empty, but Damon had reached the perimeter now and faced the regent's guard. He said, as calmly as he could, "The prince sent me to fetch two men of his own guard to him. I assume they've been alerted." So much could go wrong. Even if they did not stop him, they could send an escort with him. A hint of suspicion was all it would take. The guard said,
"Our orders are no one in or out."
"You can tell the prince that," said Damon, "after you tell him you let through the regent's pet." That got a flicker of reaction. Invoking Laurent's bad mood was like a magical key, unlocking the most forbidding doors.
"Get on with it," said the guard.
Damon nodded and walked away at a normal pace, feeling their eyes on his back. He couldn't relax, even when he got out of sight. He was continually aware of the palace activity around him as he walked. He passed two servants, who ignored him. He prayed that the training hall would be as he remembered it, remote, unguarded, and empty. It was. He felt a rush of relief when he saw it, with its older fittings and sawdust scattered across the floor. In the center stood the cross, a dark, solid bulk. Damon felt an aversion to going near it, his instinct to skirt around the periphery of the room rather than walk across it openly. Disliking this reaction so much in himself, he deliberately took a few precious few moments to walk over to the cross, to place a hand on the solid center beam. He felt the immovable wood beneath his hand. He had somehow expected to see the quilted covering, darkened by sweat or blood, some sign of what had happened, but there was nothing. He looked up to the place where Laurent had stood and watched him. There was no reason to have laced Laurent's drink with that particular drug if the intent had been only to incapacitate. Rape, therefore, was to have preceded murder. Damon had no idea whether he'd been intended as a participant or merely an observer. Both ideas sickened him. His own fate as the supposed perpetrator would probably have been even more drawn out than Laurent's, a long lingering execution before crowds. Drugs and a trio of assailants, a scapegoat brought in for the sacrifice, a servant running to inform the regent's guard at just the right time. It was a thorough plan, rendered shoddy by a failure to predict how Damon himself would react, and by underestimating Laurent's adamantine will resisting the drug, and by being overly elaborate, but that was a common failing of the Varetian mind. Damon told himself that Laurent's current predicament was not so terrible. In a court like this, Laurent could simply summon a pet to help relieve him of his difficulties. It was stubbornness if he didn't. He didn't have time for this. He left the cross. On the sidelines of the training area, close to one of the benches, there were a few mismatched pieces of armor and a few pieces of old, discarded clothing. He was glad they were here, as he had remembered, because outside the palace he would not go unnoticed in flimsy slave garments. Thanks to his close instruction in the baths, he was familiar with the foolish idiosyncrasies of Varetian clothing and could dress quickly. The pants were very old, and the fawn-colored fabric was worn threadbare in places, but they fit. The ties were two long, thin strips of softened leather. He looked down while hurriedly tying and tightening them. They served both to close the open V and to create an external crisscross of ornamentation. The shirt didn't fit, but since it was in an even worse state of disrepair than the pants, with one of the sleeve seams already coming open along the join between sleeve and shoulder, it was easy to quickly tear the arms off, then tear a split in the collar until it did fit. It was otherwise loose enough. It would cover the tell-tale scars on his back. He discarded his slave garments, hiding them out of the way behind the bench. The armor pieces were uniformly useless, consisting as they did of a helm, a rusted breastplate, a single shoulder guard, and a few belts and buckles. A leather vambrace would have helped to hide his gold cuffs. It was a shame there weren't any. It was a shame there were no weapons. He couldn't afford to look for other armaments. Too much time had passed already. He headed for the roof. The palace did not make things easy for him. There was no friendly route up and over leading to a painless first-story descent. The courtyard was surrounded by higher edifices that must be climbed. Still, he was lucky this was not the palace at Eos, or any Accolon stronghold. Eos was a fortification, built on the cliffs, designed to repel intruders. There was no unguarded way down, excluding a beetling vertical drop of smooth white stone. The Varetian palace, a froth with ornament, paid only lip service to defense. The parapets were purposeless, curving, decorative spires. The slippery domes that he skirted would be a nightmare in an attack, hiding one part of the roof from the other. Once Damon used a machicolation as a handhold, but it seemed to have no function besides ornament. This was a place of residence, not a fort or a castle built to resist an army. Vir had fought its share of wars, its border drawn and redrawn, but for 200 years there had been no foreign army in the capital. The old defensive keep at Chastion had been replaced.
the court moving north to this new nest of luxury.
At the first sound of voices, he flattened himself against a parapet and thought, only two, judging from the sounds of their feet and the voices. Only two meant he could still succeed, if he could do it quietly, if they did not sound an alarm. His pulse quickened. Their voices seemed casual, as though they were here for some routine reason, rather than part of a search party hunting down a lost prisoner. Damon waited, tense, and their voices grew distant. The moon was up. To the right, the river Serene, which oriented him west. The town was a series of dark shapes with edges picked out in moonlight, sloping roofs and gables. Balconies and gutters met one another in a chaotic shadowed jumble. Behind him, the far-flung darkness of what must be the great northern forests, and to the south, past the dark shapes of the city, past the lightly wooded hills and rich central provinces of Vere, lay the border, prickling with true castles, Ravenel, Fortaine, Marlis. And across the border, Delpha, and home. 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 Though the Akalos he had left behind him was not the Akalos he would return to. His father's reign was ended, and it was Castor who at this moment lay sleeping in the king's chamber, with Jocaste beside him, if she had not yet begun her lying in. Jocaste, her waist thickening with Castor's child. He took a steadying breath. His luck held. There was no sound of alarm from the palace, no search party on the roof or on the streets. His escape was unnoticed, and there was a way down if you were prepared to climb. It would feel good to test his physicality, to pit himself against an arduous challenge. When he had first arrived in Vere, he had been in peak condition, and staying fight-ready was something that he had worked at during long hours of confinement, in which there was little else to do. But several weeks of slow recuperation from the lash had taken a toll. Tussling with two men of mediocre training was one thing. Scaling a wall was something else altogether, a feat of stamina that drew continually on upper arm strength and the muscles of the back. His back, his weakness, newly healed and untested. He was unsure how much continual strain it could stand before muscle strength gave out. One way to find out. Night would provide a cover for descent. But after that, night was not a good time to move through the streets of a city. Perhaps there was a curfew, or perhaps it was simply the custom here, but the streets of Arles looked empty and silent. One man creeping around at street level would stand out. By contrast, the gray light of dawn with its accompanying bustle of activity would be a perfect time for him to find his way out of the city. Perhaps he could even move earlier. An hour or so before dawn was an active time in any town. But he had to get down first. After that, a darkened corner of the town, an alleyway or, back permitting, a rooftop, would be an ideal place to wait until the bustle of morning came. He was thankful that the men on the palace roofs were gone, and the patrols were not yet out. The patrols were out. The regent's guard burst out of the palace, mounted and carrying torches, only minutes after Damon's feet first touched the ground. Two dozen men on horses split into two groups, exactly the right amount to wake a town. Hooves struck the cobblestones. Lamps lit up, shutters banged open. Complaining shouts could be heard. Faces appeared at windows until, grumbling sleepily, they disappeared again. Damon wondered who had finally sounded the alarm. Had Nicaise put two and two together? Had Laurent, emerging from his drugged stupor, decided he wanted his pet back? Had it been the regent's guard? It didn't matter. The patrols were out. But they were loud and easy to avoid. It was not long before he was neatly ensconced on a rooftop, hidden between sloping tiles and chimney. He looked at the sky and judged it would be another hour, perhaps. The hour passed. One patrol was out of sight and earshot. The other was a few streets away, but retreating. Dawn began threatening from the wings. The sky was no longer perfectly black. Damon couldn't stay where he was, crouched like a gargoyle, waiting while the light slowly exposed him like a curtain rising on an unexpected tableau. Around him, the town was waking. It was time to get down. The alley was darker than the rooftop. He could make out several doorways of different shapes, the wood old, the stone moldings crumbling. Other than that, it had only a dead end, piled with refuse. He preferred to get out of it. One of the doors opened. He smelled a waft of perfume and stale beer. There was a woman in the doorway. She had curly brown hair and a prettyish face from what he could see in the dark, and an ample chest, partially exposed. Damon blinked. Behind her, the shadowy shape of a man, and behind that, warm light from red-covered lamps. A particular atmosphere and faint sounds that were unmistakable. Brothel. No hint of it on the outside, not even light coming from the shuttered windows. But if this act was a social taboo between unmarried men and women, it was understandable that a brothel be discreet, tucked out of sight. The man didn't seem to have any self-consciousness about what he'd been doing, exiting with the heavy body language of one recently sated, hefting his pants. When he saw Damon, he stopped and gave him a look of impersonal territorialism. And then he really stopped, and the look changed. And Damon's luck, which had so far held, deserted him in a rush. Govar said, "Let me guess. I fucked one of yours, so you've come here to fuck one of mine." The distant sound of hooves on the cobblestones was followed by the sound of voices coming from the same direction, the cries that had woken the town a complaining hour ahead of schedule. "Or," said Govar, in the slow voice of one who nevertheless gets there in the end, "are you the reason the guard's out?" Damon avoided the first swing, and the second. He kept a distance between their bodies, remembering Govar's bear-like holds. The night was becoming an obstacle course of outlandish challenges. Stop an assassination, scale a wall, fight Govar. What else? The woman, with her impressive, half-unclothed lung capacity, opened her mouth and screamed. After that, things happened very quickly. Three streets away, shouts and the clatter of hooves as the nearer patrol wheeled and made for the scream at full pelt. His only chance then was that they would miss the narrow opening of the alley. The woman realized this, too, and screamed again, then ducked inside. The brothel door slammed and was bolted. The alley was narrow and could not comfortably manage three horses abreast, but two was enough. As well as horses and torches, the patrol had crossbows. He couldn't resist, unless he wished to commit suicide. Beside him, Govar was looking smug. He perhaps hadn't realized that if the guard fired on Damon, he was going to be collateral damage. Somewhere behind the two horses, a man dismounted and came forward. It was the same soldier who had been in charge of the Regent's Guard in Laurent's apartments. More smugness. From the look on his face, being proven right about Damon, had him extremely gratified. "On your knees," said the soldier in charge. Were they going to kill him here? If so, he would fight, though he knew, against this many men with crossbows, how the fight would end. Behind the soldier in charge, the mouth of the alley bristled like a pine with crossbow bolts. Whether they planned to do it or not, they would certainly kill him here if given a single reasonable excuse. Damon went, slowly, to his knees. It was dawn. The air had that still translucent quality that came with sunrise, even in a town. He looked around himself. It wasn't a very pleasant alley. The horses didn't like it. More fastidious than the humans who lived there. He let a breath out.
"I arrest you for high treason," said the soldier, "for your part in the plot to assassinate the Crown Prince. Your life is forfeit to the Crown. The Council has spoken."
He had taken his chance, and it had led him here. He felt not fear, but the hard, tangled sensation between his ribs of freedom dangled before him, then snatched from his grasp. What rankled the most was that Laurent had been right.
"Tie his hands," said the soldier in charge, tossing a piece of thin rope to Gavard.
Then he moved to one side, sword at Damon's neck, giving the men in range a clear shot with the bow.
"Move and die," said the soldier in charge,
which was an apt summary. Gavard caught the rope. If Damon was going to fight, he would have to do it now, before his hands were tied. He knew that, even as his mind, trained to fighting, saw the clear line to the crossbows and the 12 men on horseback, and returned with no tactic that would do more than make a commotion and a dent, perhaps a few dents.
"The punishment for treason is death," said the soldier.
In the moments before his sword lifted, before Damon moved, before the last desperate act played out in the filthy alley, there was another burst of hooves, and Damon had to force down a breath of disbelieving laughter, remembering the second half of the patrol, arriving now like an unnecessary flourish. Really, even Castor hadn't sent as many men against him as this.
"Hold!" called a voice.
And in the dawn light, he saw that the men reining in their horses were not wearing the red cloaks of the Regent's Guard, but instead were turned out in blue and gold.
"It's the bitch's pups," said the soldier in charge, with total contempt.
Three of the prince's guards had forced their horses past the impromptu blockade and into the cramped space of the alley. Damon even recognized two of them. Jord, in front on a bay gelding, and behind him the larger figure of Orlon.
"You've got something of ours," said Jord.
"The traitor," said the soldier in charge. "You've no rights here. Leave now, and I'll let you go peacefully back."
"We're not the peaceful sort," said Jord.
His sword was unsheathed.
"We don't leave without the slave."
"You defy council orders," said the soldier in charge.
The soldier in charge on foot was left in the unenviable position of facing down three riders. It was a small alley, and Jord had his sword out. Behind him, the reds and the blues were about equal in numbers. But the soldier in charge didn't seem fazed.
He said, "Drawing on the Regent's Guard is an act of treason."
In answer, with casual contempt, Orlant drew his sword. Instantly, metal flashed all along the ranks behind him. Crossbows bristled on both sides. Nobody breathed.
Jord said, "The prince is before the council. Your orders are an hour old. Kill the slave, and you'll be the next one with your head on the block."
"That's a lie," said the soldier in charge. Jord pulled something out of a fold in his uniform and dangled it. It was a counselor.